morning. We're ready for argument in the case of People versus White. Petitioner may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Matthew Holman and I represent the people in this matter. The case before the court this morning concerns a challenge to a juror's qualifications based on his residency that was made after the jury had been sworn in. In this case, the juror had filled out his jury summons and put down his address at his father's home. However, after the jury was sworn, the court said that they would start trial the next morning at 8:30, and would anyone have a problem appearing at the time? And at that point, this juror asked if the court had any hotel vouchers. He said he had just moved to Colorado Springs, and so it would take him a while to get there. And this led to the challenge by the defense to the jury's qualifications as to residency. The case presents two general issues and then several sub-issues. The first is waiver, whether because defense counsel didn't inquire into the residency question during voir dire and didn't raise the challenge before the jury was sworn, that this constitutes a waiver of this claim. The second is, assuming that it did not constitute a waiver, whether the trial court was correct in finding that the juror was indeed a resident of Teller County at the time of his jury service. A sort of sub-issue of the second issue, which is one I want to touch on briefly later, is whether, assuming that this was somehow properly preserved and that he wasn't a resident, whether a new trial would be required. And I think this court's case of People versus DeNoyer at 660 P. Second 890 says a new trial would only be required if this disqualification caused actual bias. But I will, again, get to that in the second issue. So I'd like to start first with a discussion of the waiver issue. Under 1610.1033 and a Criminal Rule 24b2, a party must discover and raise grounds for a challenge for cause during voir dire and raise the claim before the jury is sworn, or otherwise the claim is waived. The case law out of this court and the Court of Appeals applying these standards has required that a party use reasonable diligence in examining the juror to determine whether grounds exist for a challenge. I think I'm always fascinated by procedural issues such as this, as timing of a claim, because I think ultimately they rest on some fundamental policy grounds that are more than just technical. And I think in this point is for this particular kind of a requirement, one is it creates an incentive to effectively voir dire the jury to determine whether there are important grounds for disqualification that should be raised.
Does that mean you can't rely on the form they filled out?
I think that's right, Your Honor, as to this particular question of residency. And the Court of Appeals addressed that question in a case called Crespin. The reason is that when you look at the statutes and the law, the question of residency can be a fairly complicated legal question. For example, under the statutory requirements for jury service, it says you're a resident of the county or live there 50% of the time. These are things that would just not be familiar to a juror in filling out the form. So I don't think that the filling out the summons relieves the attorney of using reasonable diligence to turn out, determine whether the juror is in fact a resident of the county. I do think in the second inquiry, whether it's some indication that his residency is in fact in the county, that may be a relevant factor that he considers that his address. But I think the case law has consistently held that a party should inquire into the question.
Mr. Holman, I just wondered, do you think we should factor in, or is it appropriate, that in this day and age, reasonable diligence must be determined a little bit by the kind of caseload that that goes on in urban courts in particular, and the lack of time available for voir dire by defense counsel?
I don't think in this case that would be a factor. And the reason is I think there was a simple question that could have been asked. If this indeed were an important grounds for that they wanted to challenge for disqualification, which is, do all of you live in Teller County? It seems an easy inquiry to make of the jury.
I think that's the responsibility of the court, maybe, to find that out.
You know, my recollection from being a trial court law clerk is that at times courts do ask those questions. They may go through the series of sort of statutory disqualifications, some that are mandatory, and they may go through the ones that are possible. But I think this is, again, a simple question. Again, if it's important for counsel to, for the party to challenge on this ground, it's an easy inquiry to make.
Therefore, you shouldn't pay attention to the written sheet you get that says he lives in Teller County.
I don't think you can rely on that to make the legal determination of residency under the statute. I think it's very easy to ask that question. One of the things is that residency is determined at the time of service. So, and here we have a juror who says that he's sort of in this, as the court found, he's in a transitional stage in his life, and he's just moved into his sister's apartment, although he still has a residency at his father's house, and gets all his mail, and has all of his property at the home. So I think it shows that it can be a complicated legal question, and so just to rely on what's written down as to excuse counsel from an inquiry, I don't think is appropriate.
How does your argument about the duty to inquire square with 1371, I guess 105.2, which is the provision that uses mandatory language, shall be disqualified if there's residents outside the county without intention to return in 12 months? And I mean, specifically, is that statute addressed in any of the other case law that you're relying on, and does it make any difference in terms of distinguishing this particular qualification issue from any other, from challenges for causes, for example, which are addressed in another provision?
Well, let me see if I can. I'll try to answer and see if I'm headed the right direction, which is, one is, I think this is a ground for challenging and not automatic disqualification.
To start with that statement, then I would like you to explain to me how that statement squares with the mandatory language of 1371.1052 as compared to the challenge for cause language of, I think it's 1610.103.1A.
May I grab my...
Sure. I think...
All right. 1375.105.2 is that... I'm trying to catch back up.
You addressed that the statute on I think on 16 of your brief, page 16 of your brief. So I didn't really mean to send you somewhere that you haven't.
And I have a copy of the statute in front of me.
Okay.
So I'm squaring language of 1371.105.2. I'm sorry, with 1610.103. Is that? All right. Well.
The essence of it is the 16, it talks about challenges for cause and seems to be consistent with other cause disqualifications that probably relates to the case law that you have cited us, whereas this 1371.105.2 isn't talking about challenges for cause. It's talking about shall be disqualified. It's talking about qualifications. And that's what I'm trying to square or trying to have your help with.
All right, as to its mandatory nature, whether this can be waived, is that right? I think reading this statute in conjunction with Rule 24 and Rule 1610.103, which addresses challenges for cause and the failure to raise them constitutes a waiver. I think when you read them together, that essentially under 1610.1033, a party has waived the ability to make a challenge on these grounds if they fail to raise it during voir dire and before the jury is sworn. I think that while the section may require a court to grant a challenge for cause that's made on one of these grounds, that 1610.103(3) indicates that if you don't make the challenge in a timely manner, that challenge is waived. There is a sort of a release valve for this kind of a problem in the context of what's a remedy if we discover something like this late, and that is, again, under the DeNoyer case, which has this disqualification created some actual bias to the defendant? So I think that's the threshold for reviewing a question that's raised untimely in this situation.
Counsel, if we get to the merits of the issue, the part that bothers me the most or that causes me the most trouble is that this young man didn't have any place to live in Teller County. I mean, that he had to go to a hotel, which is what brought about the whole problem, as he's saying. I guess he couldn't go back to his father's house because he was renting his room or something like that. And
well, what he testified to was that his father was out of town that day, so he needed to return to Colorado Springs that evening. Apparently, he did not have a key with him. I don't think that's really fleshed out in the record. To get into the house, or for whatever reason, he felt that he just couldn't go into the house. I don't know if he just didn't have the foresight to think he might actually be on the jury, that he might need to stay overnight.
But doesn't it worry you a little bit that he couldn't get into the place where he said he lived?
Actually, Your Honor, that doesn't worry me. I thought back to when I was this age, and I remembered coming home one holiday season from Colorado to Washington, D.C., where my family lives, and arriving at the airport, no one was there because I apparently had told them the wrong day. And I thought, how many times have I not had a key to my parents' house when I was that age and was unable to get in, had to wait for them to return? I don't think that meant I was no longer a resident of their home. I think the court here correctly looks at the age, the trial court correctly looked at the age of the juror, his sort of transitional stage. I again compare him to a college student who's sort of in this transitional period. He's trying to get some experience in education, but he still has a home at his father's house, and he still has all of his property there, and he still gets his mail there, and he indicates that he's in the process of trying to rearrange the room so guests can use the room. I think he is still a resident, as the court found, and this leads me to just mention one thing, which is not in the brief, which is I started looking at, well, what sort of factors do we consider in determining residency? And I think the trial court did a good job here of looking at a sort of all the totality of the circumstances in assessing this young man's status as a resident of Teller County. But there's a statute that has to do with voter registration and whether you're a resident, and it's 12102(1)(b). And it lists a number of factors that the legislature says are useful to consider in determining residency, essentially. And there are such things as business pursuits, employment, income sources, residence for income and other tax purposes, age, marital status, residence of parents, spouse and children, if any, situs of real and personal property, existence of any other residences, and the amount of time spent at each residence. And there's some other factors, but I think all of those sort of show what our trial court took into consideration here, which was this was a young man in a transitional stage in his life. He had a room in his father's house. I don't think his father would have charged him for trespassing if he tried to go over there and figure out a way to break into the house and sleep in his room. I think what he'd done is not, again, I'm reading it into the record, and it's not there. I think he didn't foresee, again, that he would be on this jury, that it would be an overnight thing, and that he should have made arrangements to actually get into the house or bring the keys with him. I don't think it's dispositive of the question of whether he's a resident. That's a long way around to answering that question. Well, if there are no further questions at this point, I think I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Shan Jeffrey on behalf of Mr. White. Since the issue granted for review by this court focused on the merits of the decision about county residency, that's where I'm going to begin, but I'm happy to answer any questions about the waiver argument as well. This is really a very simple case, Your Honors. As the Court of Appeals recognized in its opinion below, Juror C testified to two facts that dispose of this case under the statutory test for county residency. And the first fact that he testified to was that 2 weeks prior to appearing for the first day of jury service, he moved out of Teller County. He moved to Colorado Springs, which is in a different county, in order to be close to his employment. He did not describe that as a temporary move, although the trial court characterized it that way in its ruling. There's no testimony that that was a temporary move. He simply testified that he moved, and when asked point blank whether he was still a resident of Teller County, he said no. The second fact that disposes of this case is Juror C's testimony that he had no plans of returning to Woodland Park in Teller County in the next, quote, year and a half or two. So that first fact that I was talking about goes to Section 1371.1051, which is whether someone is qualified for jury service based on county residency. That second fact about having no plans to return within the next year and a half or two gets him disqualified under that second steps toward provision, Section 2E. But instead of basing its ruling on this precise statutory criteria, the court and the prosecutor sort of drummed up this new test that I'm going to affectionately refer to as the Druthers test.
What kind of test?
The Druthers test, Your Honor, because the question was, if you had your druthers, if money and employment opportunities were not an issue, Jersey, where would you like to live? So this was sort of a fantasy residence that we were getting into. I don't know if you remember this from the record, Your Honor, but he actually answered he'd like to live on the beach. And that wasn't going quite where they were hoping, so the follow-up question to that was, well, under what circumstances would you live in Woodland Park? And then Juror C started talking about how, well, he'd grown up there, and of course he had emotional ties, and if he could ever get on the fire department there, well, of course it would be a preferential place that he would like to live, because he still had family there, and he had all these memories and such. But Your Honor, that wasn't the statutory criteria.
What is at stake here? Was this a motion for mistrial now, basically? I mean,
It was made as a motion for mistrial, although that is a drastic remedy, and the court had other options here, because the court had picked 13 jurors, had seated an alternate, and so if the court had wanted to, and this is prior to the presentation of any evidence, I believe, if the court had wanted to excuse him for cause, he could have gone with the 12 jurors, or at the end of trial, he could have dismissed Juror C as the alternate, but the court didn't do any of those things. He simply left him on the jury, and this juror actually served on the jury and rendered the verdict.
Jeffrey, could you address the waiver question a little bit? Because, you're absolutely right about it says about subsection 1 of 1371.105, but subsection 2 says a prospective trial or grand juror shall be disqualified. So he really was sworn at this time, right? He was an actual juror, as I understand it. He was not a prospective juror.
He was an actual juror, that's true. And frankly, I had not focused on that language before you just brought it to my attention. So I don't have a case on point to talk about for that.
I don't think it really is.
I'm not sure if that's really that important in this context. When they say a prospective juror, the legislature was probably contemplating that this kind of issue would be ferreted out before the jury is sworn at all. I think that's an assumption, because in my experience, having read a lot of trial transcripts over the years, it's usually the judge that asks the qualifying question, is everyone a resident of Teller County? And then if that brings up any questions as to residency, then the parties need to use due diligence to ferret out those questions. But in this case, apparently the judge forgot to ask.
Well, that's actually right. I mean, the reasonable cause and so forth. But usually when the defense lawyer finishes the initial voir dire, which in some cases has been limited, you know, you say, I passed this jury for cause. Well, that implies that you think the challenges for cause are fine. So I think the waiver issue is an issue. And I guess I'm also interested in,
okay.
I didn't read the denier case, but I see it was cited in Mr. Holman's brief. And I assume it has some variation that you don't grant a mistrial under these sorts of circumstances, absent some showing of bias with respect to the defendant's rights. I don't know if that's correct. I wonder if you could just talk about both issues.
Okay. Let's start with that actual bias issue. I believe that's in the context of a challenge for cause based on bias. I don't know why actual bias would be at all relevant to a county residency determination. So that's where I stand on that issue.
Wouldn't you have to look at the policy for being a county resident to be on a jury? I mean, you know, community of your peers, your familiarity with the community, etc.
Exactly.
I mean, that Woodland Park is just uphill from Colorado Springs, and this certainly what the judge asked indicates that he was very contemporary with the goings on in Woodland Park, more so than he would be oriented now to the community of Colorado Springs. Wouldn't bias mean something like out of touch with the community, motivated to decide something against the interest of an individual living in that community? I'm just trying to get a handle on what a bias test might be in this context.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Your Honor. Usually when I think of having to prove that a juror who has served was actually biased, I would think of that as bias against the defendant personally, or against the defendant's position based on past experiences or something like that. But I would have a hard time reconciling an actual bias test with the county residency requirement. It is true, certainly, that the policy behind the county residency requirement is so that someone can be tried by a jury of their peers. But the legislature was very precise in its language about how they defined community of peers, and they define it as county resident. So I don't really think there's any room for discretionary deviation from that county residency requirement, even based on some kind of bias test.
Okay, so does that mean then, I'm sorry, does that mean that any time it's discovered that a person who's not a resident, there's a new trial required? I mean, is that the position you're taking?
No, Your Honor. I think if the trial is over, then it's too late.
Okay, and why do you draw the line there?
I've read cases that say so, and I can't remember which one it was, Your Honor, but clearly in this case, there is a provision in the rules for challenging someone's jury qualification even during the trial itself. As long as the verdict has not been rendered, you can challenge a juror for cause, and that's clear within the rules. And a motion for mistrial is, you know, what the defense used in this case, and that was the appropriate motion under the circumstances.
So basically, if it's discovered any time during the trial, the proper remedy is a mistrial.
Motion for mistrial.
Okay, thank you.
You stated earlier, counsel, that in your experience reading transcripts, generally it is the judge that asks about this particular qualification. I think you may have said about
statutory qualifications
generally. Did you encounter any authority in your research which gives that duty or implies or directs that is the judge's duty to inquire about the statutory qualifications?
Well, the general constitutional duty of the court to ensure that the defendant gets a fair trial, for one. I mean, let's just start with the big principles here. So, you know, the trial court, the judge is in control of the courtroom, is ultimately in control of voir dire. And I think that's why it's usually the judge that asks the basic questions that go to the statutory qualifications for jurors. Certainly, if anyone had noticed that the judge had forgotten to ask that question, it would not be inappropriate for one of the counsel to raise the issue. But the prosecution didn't raise it here either.
Is it correct that in this particular case, the judge did not make any general inquiry about statutory qualifications at the commencement of voir dire?
I believe that's true, at least with respect to the statutory residency requirement. I think everyone was assuming, based on the questionnaires that came back.
Is the voir dire of the judge recorded? Do we have a transcript of that?
We do.
Well, of course, the difficulty with the assumption on the jury questionnaires is they're dated at a different time than the jury cert was, correct?
Exactly, and that is why you cannot base a due diligence finding on assuming that, on the assumption, I mean, everyone was working under the assumption that people lived where they said they did when they filled out the jury questionnaire. So that was a natural assumption everyone was working under. So there really was no, defense counsel was not on any notice that they needed, that there was anything to ferret out here. And when the first evidence that one of the jurors did not live in Tiller County came to light, defense counsel immediately asked for a hearing and moved for a mistrial. And then it was litigated on the merits. And as to the waiver issue, no one below ever argued that defense counsel waived this issue. It was clear to everyone that at the first light of any evidence coming forth that someone might be disqualified or not qualified at all based on county residency, that defense counsel made the appropriate motion, and that motion was fully litigated and ruled on the merits. The prosecutor below never argued that the defense had waived this. And I, in fact, think that the state's waiver argument is waived on appeal, because that argument was made for the first time on appeal.
Isn't there a statute that suggests the appropriate way to raise this issue is in a motion for new trial? Or
yes.
A motion for mistrial, excuse me.
Mistrial, I believe. But there's a little language in that statute. I think it says motion for mistrial or other. There's a little bit of other language attached to that, where it suggests that there might be another kind of motion that might also be appropriate, but it doesn't specify what that might be. It's very vague language that follows that. But here, we don't really have to worry about that, because there was a motion for mistrial made, and that's specifically what's listed in the statute here as being appropriate under these circumstances. I'd like to follow up on a question that was asked of the state. When the state cites to cases talking about how a party can waive a juror's disqualification based on an issue of bias, I think those cases are very distinguishable from what we have here, because a party can always waive an objection to evidence of bias. Because that can be a strategic decision. There can be a juror who may have some evidence of bias, but you like that juror for another reason, and you decide not to challenge that juror for cause. Well, of course, you can't come back on appeal and say, oh, the court should have sua sponte struck that juror for cause. No, that issue is properly waived, because there was a decision there not to challenge that juror for cause based on bias, right? There can be evidence of bias, and that juror is not automatically disqualified from service. But what we have here is something altogether different. We have the basic statutory qualification for jury service. I think it's fairly jurisdictional. I'm not sure a party can waive a juror's statutory qualification for jury service.
Aren't the grounds under 1371 for qualification to be raised by a motion for challenge under 16, whatever the statute is? In the first one of those, you can challenge on the grounds that the juror is not qualified under Title 13?
You can challenge based on either one of those provisions, of course. I mean, certainly there has to be some avenue for getting the issue out in open to court, either whether that's on challenge or the judge's finding, having asked the entire jury panel whether anyone doesn't no longer lives in Teller County. So it can be on the judge's own initiative, or it can be via a motion. But we're talking about statutory qualification for service here. I see I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I just want to hit a couple of points. If there's a question, though, please, of course, interrupt in the little amount of time I have. As to the question of whether bias is an appropriate standard of review in the mistrial setting, I think it's correct. I think the focus of those cases is not on the character of the grounds for disqualification, but rather on that now there's this higher threshold that since the claim was not raised prior to the swearing of the jury in the trials, either in the middle or finished, that you need to actually show some actual prejudice to the defendant. And there is a second case in the Court of Appeals. I looked at DeNoyer. It's a case that involves a juror who recognized a witness middle of trial, and I can't remember what the grounds are of the other case. But in any event, I think it's this threshold of prejudice that's required. I just wanted to quickly point out that that this juror did have plans to return to his father's home within the next 12 months to rearrange the stuff in his room, and apparently he was going to stay there now that his father was back. So I think he did intend to return within 12 months. I have nothing else unless the court has any other further questions. Thank you very much.
On behalf of the court, I thank both counsel for your arguments. The case stands submitted, and